You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone, welcome along to Series 7, Episode 31 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It is Kieran Burke and Gary Riley with you once again this week. We're brought to you by our main sponsor, that's Quinn AV. For all your sound, lighting and AV solutions, check out quinnav.ie. We've got probably the biggest game of the Premier Division season so far coming up on Friday night. That's Derry City against Shamrock Rovers. So we're going to have audio with Rory Higgins and with Shane McElhenney on the podcast a little bit later on. We'll talk Stephen Kenny in Ireland after another damaging week for the boys in green. We'll look back at last week's games and we'll look ahead to a big weekend, because not only have we got that big game in the Premier, but of course we've got the FAI Cup quarterfinals as well. But we must start this week's podcast by discussing a very serious alleged incident that is said to have occurred in the First Division game on Friday night last between Kerry FC and Longford Town. We're going to start by reading out the statements of the two clubs. We will start by reading out the Kerry FC statement, which was posted on Saturday morning time. Kerry Football Club is aware of an alleged racial remark directed at one of our players during last night's SSE Airtricity Men's First Division game against Longford Town. The club continues to work with the FAI and the League of Ireland to kick racism out of the game. Kerry FC stands with the player affected and he is receiving all support available to him at this time. We condemn discrimination in football and will not tolerate any form of hate towards any of our players. Mount Hawk Park and Kerry FC is a community where all people are welcome regardless of race, ethnicity and other diverse backgrounds. The matter has been referred to on Garda Síochána. Kerry FC will be making no further comment on the matter at this time as investigations are ongoing. That was, as I said, on Saturday. We didn't get a response until Monday evening from Longford Town. The response was as follows. Longford Town FC is aware of an alleged incident at our recent game against Kerry FC at Mount Hawk Park last Friday, the 8th of September. After conducting our own investigation, speaking with players and staff, Longford Town FC is extremely confident that the alleged incident did not occur and we are fully behind the individual in question. We will work with the relevant authorities to establish the facts of the matter. Longford Town FC condemns all types of discrimination and racism. The club will be making no further comment at this time. Gary, we should point out first that neither myself or yourself were at this game on Friday. So yep, we have no real idea what went on the pitch or after the game. There was a video of a bit of a melee. We have no real idea what was said, what wasn't said. There was very few Longford Town supporters that travelled. I'm not aware whether there was Kerry fans that may have heard or not heard what went on or whatever. But the truth is, there's very few people that actually know what occurred on the pitch, other than probably a small select group of players that may have been around this alleged incident. So there's very little we can say on the incident itself. And I should also point out that earlier today we chased up with different groups just to see where the timeline of everything sits. And we can confirm that this alleged incident is subject to an ongoing investigation. So we have to be very careful in how we discuss things on the podcast this evening. But what we can talk about is how the two clubs have dealt with this incident, this alleged incident. And I think it's fair to say that Longford Town have been absolutely hammered on social media over the last couple of days for their reaction to this. I suppose the big question many people have is, why did it take until Monday evening for Longford Town to respond?
I suppose, you know, taking ourselves out of it, and you know, with our connections to Longford Town, I do want to highlight that neither of us were at the game and neither of us were involved in the investigation that Longford Town have conducted. And while we're both staunch Longford Town men, we weren't a part of this. So, and also we're not spokespeople for the club either. But I think the statement should have been a bit more lively, possibly conducted in conjunction with Kerry FC, you know, United Front, that we're both looking at this. We both condemn, as we all do, any racist discrimination or discrimination of any kind. And I think the part of the reaction that Longford Town saw on their post about the statement on Twitter was very strong. It was a lot of it, and a large part was due to probably the delay, but also the second paragraph, mm-hmm. as it's now known, that we are extremely confident that this incident did not occur, which is very strong language, and it's clear that Longford Town are almost completely certain that this incident did not occur to their satisfaction. And while they're doing their own investigation, it seems that they've gathered up enough of their own evidence to say that they are as confident, extremely confident as they say they are,
yeah,
that this incident did not occur. I suppose there's a bit of a contradictory point.
Let me pick up. So my issue with that would be, first of all, the speed of the statement. Kerry released theirs Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon. For me, there's no reason Longford Town couldn't have been in around the same ballpark in terms of releasing their statement. For me, the statement should have read something like, Longford Town FC is aware of an alleged incident that took place last night at Mount Hawk Park. We will conduct our own internal investigation, and we will fully cooperate with any external investigations, and we will make further comment when the outcome of these investigations is ready to go, or something along those lines. I think Longford Town and a lot of people under our post where we posted these statements on Monday have pointed out, Jer, for example, has said, if not handled correctly, this could have huge consequences upon the great name of Longford Town Football Club. That correct. Second paragraph has really put Longford Town now in a position where, as you said, Longford feel they're confident that nothing occurred, but then in the next paragraph, they mentioned that they will work with the relevant authorities to establish the facts of the matter. So do Longford Town have all the facts, or do they not have all the facts? And if they do not have all the facts, how can you be, quote, extremely confident that this did not occur?
And I think that's the correct criticism here, that but it's based on their own investigations, and they say, and to be fair, they qualify that to a degree, that based on what they have been able to do, we'll say on Saturday and Sunday before that statement was released, that they are satisfied that the incident did not occur and they're backing their own player. Just want to highlight though that while nothing has been established yet, and as you said at the outset, investigations are ongoing, Longford have a duty to their player as a football club, same way that Kerry has a duty to their player who was the recipient of this alleged racist comment. And nothing has been established yet. So Longford Town, and not only is it their player, but it's also their employee, so there's also other law that must be followed. But I think the speed of the statement, it could have came out a bit quicker. There's no question about that. And probably didn't need to include the pieces about their own investigation. I would have preferred if it was a bit quicker over the weekend.
Yeah, as I said, this is subject to an ongoing investigation. So we do have to be delicate in how we discuss this, but certainly, as you said, Longford Town have a duty of care to their employee. But at the same time, if something is discovered in terms of this alleged incident taking place, then we would hope, as Longford Town supporters, and again, we're nothing else other than that. Yes, we have varying levels of roles within the club on a volunteer basis, but we're not spokespeople for Longford or anything like that, as some people have tried to suggest over the last couple of days. But if something is uncovered in the course of these investigations, we as Longford Town supporters would want to see that dealt with in the firmest and swiftest possible manner.
Oh, nothing less can be expected. There's no two ways about it. I don't think Longford Town or any club in the League of Ireland would be found wanting in that particular case. If the allegations are found,
it is it's a real shame that this isn't the first time we've discussed, I suppose, something similar to this on the podcast this season. I think people have been drawing parallels about how quickly the incident where obviously there was those vile chants about Stephen Bradley's son, how quickly that was dealt with, about the Pico Lopez incident outside Oria, how quickly that was dealt with, but there was witnesses to those incidents. There was, I think, video footage in a lot of the cases, whereas, as I said at the outset, there's only a small group of players here really that know what happened or what didn't happen. This isn't as clear cut. And that's not me doubting at all the Kerry accusation. This Kerry player has obviously reported this because he feels an unacceptable comment has been made, as Billy Dennehy said after the match. So this needs to be investigated thoroughly. But again, people need to allow this investigation to take place.
Without a doubt, and I don't think there's any question about that. I think the we all want an investigation. We all want to know what happened here. And once facts are established to a satisfactory extent, then the right action is taken, no matter who it befalls to. If it's Longford Town, they need to make, I don't, I was going to say make an example, but it's not that, you know.
Do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
Yeah.
And if it's sack the player or whatever it is, I don't know, but then that action needs to be taken.
Yeah.
And there's no question about that. And I don't think there's anybody either on the Twitter post or anywhere in society that would say anything different. And certainly not us. We would want that, as you said, we're supporting Longford Town for a very, very long time. We don't want that in our club. And that's saying that as Longford Town fans. Yeah. And I don't think that's up for question.
Yeah, as I said, look, that needs to be left to the authorities. Let them do their work, and we will pick up on this when there's further news to report. As such, I suppose, just from the one thing we can talk about is statements and reaction of clubs. I think no matter what the outcome of this is, Longford Town probably need to sit down and review how they dealt with this, because there have been grievances raised online. Some fair, people will say, some maybe unfair, but I think there is major flaws with what the reaction over the last couple of days, and I think Longford will need to sit down as a club and look on how they hopefully they won't have to ever deal with an incident like this again. But the mechanisms certainly I don't think have been well oiled, let's say, over the last couple of days.
Correct. Don't dispute any of that. I can see being. You can see what they were trying to do, like try to talk to the players and staff that were on the scene and then come out with a statement. Probably put the cart before the horse in that case, to say the least. Yeah. I think the better thing to do would have been a statement earlier on, or more immediately after the game, similar to Kerry's, and then worked with the authorities that are investigating this at the moment. I think there's definitely improvements to be made in that area, to say the least.
Yeah, we're going to move on from this in a second. The other thing I just want to point out is I think there was some tweets sent our way to try and suggest that Between the Stripes had been very quiet on the matter, that we were going to try and sideskirt this issue. Anyone that listened to last week's pod knows we recorded last week's podcast on Sunday night as I was flying to Paris on Monday. I made the decision on Monday when I was traveling. I said to myself, I'm going to try and stay off social media as much as possible this week. I'm going to take a break. Anyone that knows the work we do on this, the pod every week, traveling the games, doing interviews, running the Twitter, between, you know, my actual day job, between commentary and all the rest, you can be approaching burnout at times. So I said, I'm taking this week, no matter if Damien Duff resigns from Shells or whatever, I am taking the week off. I'm not posting anything on the Twitter. I think the last thing I posted on the Twitter on the Monday was the news that Jack Moylan would be leaving Shells at the end of the season. And bar the odd reply here or there off the account where I was sitting on the jacks or lying on the bed or doing whatever, I stayed off the Twitter, really. So we were not being quiet on the issue or trying to downplay the issue or anything like that. We knew we were recording this podcast this week, and we knew this would be issue number one on the podcast this week, and we were going to tackle it head on. And people have said, oh, they'll try and be biased and defend the club and all the rest. That is not the case. We are not attached to what I've seen some people say, describe us as Longford Town attached media or something along those lines.
Associated media, I think, was one of the comments. Media,
yeah. That's not the case. We go to games, we hand out hammerings, as people know. We will hammer players, refs, managers, clubs, all the rest. But we don't do that with an agenda. We don't sit down and say, let's hammer this person this week because we don't like them or whatever. We go to games. We see things with our own eyes. We call it as we see it. That's what you get on this show. You get what it says on the tin. And I think that is why this show has been so popular down the years. Obviously, there's people that won't like that style. And that is absolutely okay. But some people have tried to suggest that we would downplay the issue, try to minimize the issue. This is an extremely serious issue. And we want to see the clubs, the league, and particularly our own club, Longford Town, deal with this in the best way possible. And I think we have just outlined over the last few minutes that we feel so far Longford Town could have done an awful lot better. But as I said, this is an ongoing investigation, so there's very little we can say on the actual alleged incident. We will leave it to the authorities, and when we have further news to report, then we will come back to you with it. Right, Gary, let's move on and talk about Stephen Kenny and the Republic of Ireland. Obviously, I was in Paris last Thursday, and I'm paying the price for it now. As you can probably hear, listeners, I am absolutely dosed to the high heavens because the heat was brutal out there last week. I had the aircon on day and night for four nights solid, and I am paying the price for it now. But I was obviously in the Aviva then Sunday as well. But look, with the French game, Gary, people are saying, oh, 2-0, it wasn't that bad. Of course, that is the case. They're the best team in the world, bar none. Yeah. My issue with the French game was we looked like a team that had absolutely zero belief in ourselves that we could do anything in that game. Never mind score a goal or draw or win. We didn't look like we had any belief to do anything. Anytime we got the ball, turn back, give it to the centre halves. And it was just, I thought there was no heart in the team, really. And the only area where we probably could have hurt the French possibly was set pieces. And our set pieces were dreadful. And then Sunday, good first half performance, obviously. But the second half, for me, was almost a rewind of watching the game in Athens where there was tactical changes made by the opposition. Stephen Kenny took too long to react to those, and the game passed us by. And for me, as a result, there is absolutely no way he can continue as Ireland boss.
So you're firmly in the Kenny out camp?
Yeah. You had been leaning that way longer before me.
Yeah.
And then I was leaning that way already going into Athens. Athens was the end one for me. That's where I totally changed. And then this week I've seen further indictment of why Stephen Kenny cannot continue as Ireland boss.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, I didn't travel to Paris. Fortunately, in other ways, of course. But I think there was two players that killed me in the first half, which was Jason Malumbi and Josh Cullen. They probably made 40 or 50 passes between each other. And there was a clear game plan to push up the wing backs very high up the pitch. And the way France were not pressing in the first half kind of gave them that freedom to get into those positions. And the ball was never fed out to them, or it wasn't fed out to them in the frequency that it needed to be. And, you know, we don't actually know, could Enes Evans have beaten one or two of these boys?
Well, one player who could beat players, the only Irish player that the French were afraid of was Ogbene, because he bet a couple of players, and you could see then later on they were trying to grab him by the waist, pulling his jersey. They were actually afraid of his pace.
Yeah.
And the fullback, Hernandez, who's probably one of France's weaker players, was on a yellow card, and we never ran at him once. We never tested him once. And then there was occasions where Ogbene did get it and he turned back, and that was just the thing for me. There was no belief in the team, and I think that goes back to the manager.
Yeah, I'd be very much in agreement with that. I think there was like a fear of what was going to occur before ball was kicked, and that meant that there was, how can we get out of this situation if we, you know, fall behind, or, you know, how do we manage this impending beating?
Yeah, just on that, the goals we concede outside of the box again, yeah. And Ireland had been given warning shots earlier in the game from outside of the box, and then conceding after the start of the second half like they did in Athens. So we are conceding the exact same goals that we have conceded throughout the Stephen Kenny reign.
Very true. And it's disappointing that these issues haven't been resolved. And it's just very testing. Like, you could become very jaded with the same things over and over again. And we saw it in Greece, and you think you can't. And I don't believe there's any real expectation that we're going to beat France. And there's no shame in losing to France, but you lose in a certain way.
Yeah.
And I don't think there was the required belief and desire to push France a bit more than they did. Now, obviously, with the second goal going in, you know, you treat the game as if it was back, as it's a French game earlier on this year in Dublin, where you keep in the game.
Yeah.
Like what UCD did last year, for example, to stay up. You keep in the game, you keep in touch all the time as best you can. And who knows, that Collins header could have went in and it would have been 1-1. And we would have it would have been a very different picture. I think we've got to a point in Kenny's reign where it's not, I'm not sure if it's tenable anymore.
It's not.
And there's a couple of pieces around it where you'd like, I would have liked a lot of things done a bit differently. I think the backroom staff haven't helped Stephen Kenny one jot throughout his reign. Now, I know there's been a good bit of churn there where,
yeah,
was it Anthony Barry was one of the very well regarded coach, was with Chelsea, and then unfortunately went to Belgium, who were in the World Cup. So that's, you know, you can't begrudge him any of that. But it was a big loss to Ireland. And but I don't like, I don't understand what, because of some of these coaching issues, shots being conceded from outside the box all the time, goals conceded early on in the second half. These are coaching staffing issues, coaching staff issues. And while, yes, the manager ultimately takes responsibility for that, he's not been, I don't think he's been helped in, to the right extent. One other piece about Stephen Kenny is the media,
yeah,
pieces.
Yeah.
And while, yes, we hammer the FEI in a lot of ways, this is an unacceptable performance by the FEI in this particular case. We saw that during the summer, I think, with James McLean having to cut in across the question. Mm. Like Stephen Kenny was looking down, you know, to assume at FAI media person, like, what's this? You know, like, you know, sports press conferences aren't the same as, you know, politician press conferences. They're kind of orchestrated to an extent. And I think you know, Stephen Kenny, unfortunately, on a number of occasions has said, this is the game we need to win.
Yeah.
This is the competition we're going to win. This is the competition we need to do well in. We're going to qualify. We're going to win the Nations League. All of those comments were made by Stephen Kenny. None of them came to pass. Why were these comments allowed to be said? You know, and it just created multiple little rods for his back, as the saying yeah. goes. Yeah. And it's been used to beat him further into a corner. On the performances, though, and I've been more critical of Stephen Kenny, certainly for a lot longer than you have been. And I think the lack of urgency.
Yep.
And it's a problem, as we've said, this season, it's a problem around, you know, the philosophy of managers in the game at the moment where, yeah, we had 1,000 passes and we lost 3-0. Obviously, I'm not that much of a Barclays Premier League fan, but there was a game there that I think West Ham won 3-0 or 3-1 and they had like 17% possession or 20% or something like that. I think it was against Brighton.
I'm sure we've seen it recently in Oriel, Derry last week with the 23% beating Dundalk. But
yeah,
for me, this whole thing about Ireland are playing much better football, it's a COD. I don't want to sound like Eamon Dunphy, but it's a COD. I am bored relentless at the moment watching Ireland because there is no hell and fury at the end of the games. Like, we are 2-1 down against the Dutch at home. Stephen Kenny asked for the crowd to come out and get behind the team, and he got that. And yeah, we never laid a glove on them in the last 15 minutes. We passed the ball sideways and backways and sideways and backways. We never, you know, got a bit of rough and tumble going where we could get the crowd behind us and use the crowd to our advantage. Same in the French game. 2-0 down. Let's take a chance. Let's do something. No, we just let the games peter out, pass us by.
Yeah,
you can make as many passes as you want. It's not effective. We had 300. We outpassed the Dutch the other night. We had more passes than the Dutch. We had 2 shots on goal.
Yeah, and 2 good. And you know, I think there was an idea our Dutch didn't really have that many chances. Gavin Bazuna had to make 2 one-on-one saves, really.
I thought his distribution across the 2 games was very, very poor.
Was poor. And also
got away with a big mistake in Paris. Only VAR saved him, and he should have saved the penalty.
I don't know, whatever about the penalty, he should have done better to not give away that penalty. He should have been out quicker and he would have got to the ball that fraction of a second sooner. You know, so I see the screenshot of where the ball just missed his foot before he clobbered, what's his name? the right back.
Dumfries.
Dumfries, thank you. And if he was there a split second sooner, he would have got that toe on the ball, which would have meant that it wasn't a penalty. And Ireland would have protected that 1-0 lead for a bit longer. And then next thing you got to half time, and next thing you know, it's 1-1 at the end of the game, and it's not too bad. But I think the lack of urgency that you see in so many games, you know, I think back to that Troy Parrott 96-minute winner against Lithuania or Latvia or whoever that was.
Lithuania,
I don't mean to use those names interchangeably. That's not a success. That's not good enough. There was no, constantly in so many games, there's no urgency, there's no desire, there's no, as I said semi-regularly, you have to die to win 3 points. And I don't see enough dying. I see a lot of effort, and there's no question about the effort. And, you know, every team does that. You know, you don't rarely see teams
down tools.
You know, and you definitely don't see that. And it'd be hard to do. I can't imagine any, you know, player playing for their country down in tools, regardless of who's the manager. Like,
There's one or two in the Ireland squad I wouldn't be so sure of.
I know that, and I know you have your problems, but I just don't see it that happen that often, because it's your country, and comes from the manager, that standards, the lines that you don't cross, you don't not do it. I think it's come to, you know, a very difficult position for a lot of people. A lot of people, you know, Stephen Kenny has gotten all the chances, and I don't see enough of a change. I do want to say one thing, and I know I've been blathering for a good while here. I wholeheartedly, not for a second, do I believe we don't have the players.
Really?
Really. I genuinely don't. I don't, and I'm not saying that we're world beaters and we're not, you know, we shouldn't expect to beat the French. I've already said that I don't expect to beat the French. I don't expect to beat the Dutch. However, and this has been quite a large talking point since the game on Sunday in particular, we are out of competing. At very early points in all the competitions we've been in since Stephen Kenny took over. We have been written out of contention too early on. We're not keeping in touch.
Yeah.
And that hampers our progression, the next step, the more investment, all these other things are building blocks every time you go out and play an international match. And we're not building those blocks anymore. I think we have the players, because I keep going back to, you know, there's other clubs or other countries, excuse me, with smaller populations, haven't been to a World Cup, haven't been to a Euros or something like that, trying to keep in touch, do their best with the tools they have. I don't think Stephen Kenny's getting the best out of the players at his disposal. This idea that it's a championship team playing against a Premier League team, and that's not without its merits. But there's methods that you do that you're not totally blown out of the competition.
I think it should be pointed out as well, the championship is one of the most competitive leagues in Europe. All I keep hearing is it's a team of championship players.
It's a sixth league in Europe.
Yeah.
There's no question about that.
We'd all love to have players playing in the top four in the Premier League, but as you've said so many times in the past, Lithuania, who we scraped by, how many Premier League players do they have? Armenia, who we scraped by, Luxembourg, that we lost to, I think they have a few players in the Champions League, but overall, how many players do they have in the Premier League? The Premier League is not the be-all and end-all, and that is something, an attitude that really needs to change. But look, we need to move this conversation on a little bit. I think it's clear to everyone, even the most staunch Stephen Kenny fan, that Kenny will not be the Ireland manager next year, but do you think he should take charge of the remaining games in this campaign?
There is technically still a light at the end of the tunnel, is there?
No. I mean
for competition.
This playoff thing that he's now turned to, I think I've seen somewhere today there's a 10% chance that Ireland will get that playoff.
Now, does that depend on Israel qualifying?
It depends on other results. And there was one result that Poland were beaten by, was Albania the other night, if I'm not wrong, and that was a bad result for Ireland.
Okay. Because I think Israel had to beat someone or beat Romania or Belarus or something like that.
Oh, well, funny enough, our friend Fitzy just posted into our group chat there a screenshot of Israel beating whoever they were playing tonight. Could have been Belarus, actually. So I assume he's done that because that's good news for Ireland. But look, I don't think you can be hanging your hat on that. We've got three qualifiers left and a couple of friendlies then. I think the mistake that Ireland have made in recent years, the Nations League has been treated as kind of a warm-up thing for qualifiers. I think at this stage now, you've said it, we can't even compete in qualifiers. I think the Nations League is our best route into qualifying for major competitions. So
yeah.
I would be moving Kenny along before the remaining games in this campaign, getting a new manager appointed quickly, let him see what he has to work with, and then fully attack the Nations League and the World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, I see the merit in that. I would actually like to see him finish it out, to be quite honest. Now, I'm Kenny out, but I think, you know, it's not like a club where, like, oh, you're, you know, falling towards lower half of the table come the end of the season. You get a new manager in because you didn't do as well as you expected, and he gets to root out the players, and you bring in a new squad or a bunch of new players in the transfer market. It's international football, it's quite different, obviously. I don't see real value in changing what's going on now at the moment. One thing that is interesting is that the players have consistently come out and backed Kenny, you know, in any media stuff that you see. Now, you know, it's going to be very hard to go, lad, this fella's crap, get him out of here. But they've been quite,
I suppose, in comparison to the Vera Powell situation where with very little support forthcoming.
Yeah, correct. And you know, that probably said a lot more about the internal workings of the camp, where it seems like for the Irish women's team. But I think for here, there seems to be general backing of the player. Like, you're not even hearing any international player says that Kenny isn't the man for the job, unnamed player. You know, you're not even seeing any of that type of stuff that you would have seen in other times. So yeah, I think there's different things. I think the part of the thing about Kenny, you know, holding on to his backroom staff that probably I don't think are giving him half enough. It's part of their job to see, well, what did the Netherlands do when they were 1-0 down at halftime?
I think it's clear to everyone Kenny will not be the Ireland manager beyond his contract. So I don't think there's much point in continuing with the forthcoming games. I think you need to get the new man in there. But look, that's just my opinion. Let's move on to League of Ireland. This is probably the latest we've ever gone into a pod without actually touching on League of Ireland as yet. But we'll look back at the First Division games from last week. There was only the one Premier Division game, of course. But we will have audio with Rory Higgins shortly because, as I said, Derry Rovers on Friday night is absolutely huge. But looking back at what happened in the First Division on Friday, we've obviously touched on that very serious alleged incident that is reported to have occurred at Mount Hawk Park. But on the game itself, Kerry nil, Longford Town nil. This was a dreadful, dreadful performance for Longford Town. Have they blown their chances at the playoffs?
I think earlier on in the evening, you know, as the games were being played around the country in the First Division, it was looking kind of with Treaty ahead, beating Wexford and Longford Town not losing at that moment in time, that we're hoping that Longford Town could nick a goal and get the 3 points needed to keep that going. I think the most frustrating point is about the whole game is that they followed up a measured, hard-working, excellent performance against Galway the week before with that.
Yeah.
And I thought Kerry did quite well. They rode their luck in parts. There were, you know, there was some really good defending by Kerry, and they had their own chances as well. I don't think there was any real hairy moments that they had some shots and stuff like that, that I think Jack Brady was fully behind. And I just was disappointed with the chances that Longford Town didn't create throughout the night. And then even O'Brien Whitmarsh does really well, and he feeds Christian McGerson in probably 5 or 10 minutes left maybe in the game, and unfortunately Christian doesn't hit the back of the net, which was probably the biggest surprise from this game. So yeah, it's just, it's unfortunate, and I do be thinking about like what Hendo said, was say after the Harps game, we need to go and beat Galway.
Yeah.
Perfect. Went ahead and did that, and then dropped 2 points against Kerry. For a team that's looking to get, you know, remedy the poor start to the season for a number of reasons, as we've highlighted in the past, I think it's a tough one.
Yeah, because we've spoken about other sides that have dropped points against Kerry and how it might cost them for their objectives for the season, and I have a feeling now that the games might just run out for Longford Town in terms of the playoff. On, Bray 1, Galway 4. Galway bounced back from their defeat against Longford.
Yeah, they do, and it took them, I think they scored 2 goals like well into the injury time at the end of the game. I think, was it a case of Bray trying to push forward to get that equaliser, but Galway did very well in the game. They were clinical, even I know it's the last couple of minutes, but their last 2 goals were very nice. The defending was brutal.
What's new?
Yeah, absolutely not a great defensive season for Bray, make no mistake. But I think the game was a very, just a good reminder of that Galway have the class in the first division.
And this was important for them to get that good feeling again going into the cup game now against the Dundalk on Friday.
Absolutely. You want to, you know, even like I say, Rob Manley, he played a lovely little ball in to set the fourth goal up. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's just really nice bits of play.
But Gary, just before we move on from that game, there was quite a few controversial decisions in the first division as ever this weekend, or last weekend. We got a clip sent to us of one of the penalty in this one that the Galway got. Again, the angle very, very hard to see, but there was a feel that was an extremely soft decision.
Yeah, it's hard. I went back and looked at it. I seen it in the highlights, and I couldn't really confirm it to my own satisfaction. So it was very hard for me to make out. So I'll reserve judgment for the moment.
Yeah, and look, the next game we're going to move on to, there was a very controversial decision in this one. Treaty 1, Wexford 2. The penalty that was saved, but there was a red card here for a Treaty player. It looked soft, but again, it's one of those where the angle isn't ideal. Your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I thought it was soft, to be quite honest. Mm. There seemed to be like a good bit of what, you know, type reaction. Is this actually a penalty? So yeah, probably a tough one on Treaty, particularly because they were doing so well in the game.
Yeah, whatever about awarding the penalty, I'm not really sure there was need for a second yellow card there.
Look, the rule is very clear. You know what I mean? It's simple as that. I know it's not great, and we want all the players on the pitch as best as possible. But I think there was no two ways about it. Second yellow.
Ethan Boyle taking the penalty. I don't know what that's.
Why?
About.
Yeah. Look, maybe he has. I just can't remember. Has he been taking penalties all year?
Again, it's 12 o'clock.
I just can't remember whether he is or isn't. But look, it was a big chance for Wexford to equalise. But look, they got it over the line in the end. For Chambers, he did so well to save the penalty. The equaliser, it kind of, I don't really know what happened there. Did you see it? It kind of came in and it kind of either surprised him and it just went in or something like that.
Was it the one where, or was that the winner where he kind of saves it, but like...
No, that was the winner, yeah.
Stuns him almost. The goalkeeping on both ends in this game was, I know the Treaty keeper saved the penalty, but the goal he conceded was very poor. And I thought the defending for the, as you said, for some of the Wexford goals as well, left a lot to be desired.
Completely, and look, it's been probably, I don't think anybody would disagree that it's been their big issue for them this season. They've conceded too many goals and goals like that all year, which has been, look, it's been very damaging all season. And this is going to be the first time finishing outside the playoffs, isn't it?
Treaty.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. You know, it was probably always going to happen. Like, they were probably going to have a down season before they were, you know, maybe going deep in the playoffs the season, you know, for a season or two, or getting promoted. So it's still a disappointment, though. You never want to see it. But look, it was always a possibility. But yeah, look, probably their season is fading away as well, is it?
You'd be encouraged by the performances still, though. But
they're running out of road, and it's the same for Longford Town. Just they're running out of games.
Yeah. Speaking of bad defending, Finn Harps nil, Waterford 4.
Well, mother. What, 10 minutes? I think in the second half, kind of set it all for this game.
Yeah.
Really bad defending. I think it was Ian McMenemy's goal. What exactly was going on? The keeper throws out a brutal ball out to a lad who's in acres of space by himself. I think there's the closest players are to him are two Waterford players. McMenemy nicks it off him and hits it in off the post, and it's just like, are you doing a bit on the pitch? Like, what's going on? I nearly thought the ref had blown the whistle or something like that. You know what I mean? It was like, what's happening? Desperate stuff. And also sums up, you know, Finn Harp's season. Like,
I was
many goals.
Sticking through a good few fan forums today and over the last couple of days, and the reaction to this one from Harps fans, it's been quite telling. Earlier in the season, you know, as we talked about, it's kind of talk about the longer term project and about how they've improved since July. Whereas I think this result, a lot of people were like, are we actually going anywhere here?
Yeah. And it kind of, in a way, it's kind of seeming like the plan or the vision is becoming a bit more distant as time goes on, which is obviously not what you want when you're, you know, trying to make a considerable number of changes around the club after, you know, I'm not saying that Ollie Horgan was unsuccessful as Harps manager, but like, you know, he was there for a very long time, and when he decided to go in a different direction, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to go in that different direction. And for the stuff, you know, the changes that were made in the summer, they haven't made any major inroads and improvement.
Yeah, we didn't expect them to really compete this season, but we probably didn't expect them to be this far off the pace either. There's been such a turnover of players. Like, they've probably had two or three squads worth of players there this year.
And if
you couple them all together, it's probably still not a half decent team now.
to an extent, yeah. Yeah, and that's unfortunate. Like, but they've been, you know, I think I said it a couple of weeks ago. If it wasn't last week, it was the week before.
Excuse me.
There's probably, you know, there was a lot of talk about what was going on that probably created a more difficult situation for them.
It's a bit like Stephen Kenny.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. Very much so.
Cove 1 at low nil. The GOAT, Jack Doherty, at it again. What a free kick.
Yeah, I was watching some of this game. I was actually flicking between this game and Athlone ladies were doing a job on, was it Bowes? I think. Jenny Mac, I can't remember. A lot of football consumed.
Have to play a bit of ball, does he?
Sorry?
Kilduff, does he have to play a bit of ball?
He does, but look, he has two ballers, Dana Sheriff and Matty Gibson. I think they're amongst the top scorers in the league in the Women's Premier Division this season. Two ballers. They ran the show.
Very good.
I think Gibson scored one. I think Dana Sheriff got two on the night. They're a good side, and they have been for the last 2 years. But it was just, there wasn't much in this game. I think Athlone probably would have been particularly disappointed. Probably didn't create enough chances. Lee Stacey made some nice saves for Cove, kept them in it. He's had a bag of clean sheets this season, and it goes to show, Ethan always says, you know, we quote him a few times because he's very rarely right, is that man, but he's right in a few bits, and he's right dead right about the first division. Clean sheets gets you out of it, and you know they've been very good, and Lee Stacey is obviously a big part of that. I think he got his 10th clean sheet of the season there. So yeah, motoring along nicely.
We'll move on to preview the games this coming weekend in the first division. We'll start with Bray against Treaty.
A season that's over and a season that's almost over, probably, is it? Who's who, though? probably, I think for Treaty, didn't need to win this game.
Yeah.
They have the capacity to do it, particularly when you look at some of the defending that them boys are at.
Yeah.
In Bray, there's no question that they can.
I forgot to say as well, when we were reviewing the Galway game, brilliant rustling from Galway with that match graphic.
Oh, yes, they actually deleted it, didn't they?
Yeah, which was strange, but you can probably guess what went on there. But we asked for more rustling in the league, and that's exactly what we want to see. So to the Galway graphics crew, big well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, they're big fans of ours. Yeah, good to see. Look, that was a great story that came out earlier on this season. So it's good to see that it was the rustling is kept alive and well.
Yeah. On this one, though, I think I'd be leaning the way of a Treaty win.
Oh, completely.
There's a lot more to be positive about a Treaty than there is about Bray on the pitch.
Yeah, definitely. They've been... They've had one of the more difficult seasons. I know they're only at a three years, but it's been a more testing season than what we've seen in the past from them. So it would be great if they could get something out of this game and just keep them ticking over for the playoffs. But I think it's going to be, as I said, they're going to run out of games, but they're going to do what needed to be done on Friday. I think there's always a few goals. I'm going to go 2-1 Treaty.
Yeah, I'll follow you on that one. Athlone against Kerry. Kerry repeat the trick of earlier in the season?
Just before you go on to that, I just want to highlight, while Bray had a poor night at the office, Harry Groom scored a very good goal for Bray.
Mm. Yeah, I really liked him at Wexford and probably hasn't
lit it up as much.
I would have thought going there under Ian Ryan, I thought he would have been a real key player for Bray this season, but just hasn't happened for Bray.
Just hasn't taken.
Athlone against Kerry. Obviously, Kerry, this is where they got their famous first win, but I think Athlone will have too much for them here.
I think so. Athlone are probably a more oiled machine than they were when they played Kerry the first time this season. I think they're more...
Well, they can still throw in a real stinker of a performance.
Oh, absolutely. Ryan. Yeah,
Kerry, obviously, defensively, they improved massively against Longford the other night, but it was a Longford team that created very little. I think this Athlone team with the players we were always referencing all the time, I think they will have too much firepower. I'd probably be going 2-3-0 to Athlone. I'll go 2-0.
I'm going to go 2-0 with Perot to score 2.
Fair enough. You always have to outdo me. Waterford against Cove.
Yeah, I think... What's there to say about game, you know, teams that are like comfortable in the playoffs? Like, you know, what are you going to learn from each other? Like, they might, with the way it's done, second against fifth and third against fourth, this is a potential first division playoff final.
Yeah.
So you don't want to give too much away.
This is your fourth meeting of the season.
I know that, but you know,
there's a few players that have come into Waterford there over the last week or so.
Well, what do you think? What were you going here? Like, do you think this is in the RSC as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit hard to get excited about it at this stage.
Cause, that's what I mean.
Cove had. They seem to be doing well in the games against the big. Like, they struggled in these games at the start of the season. Middle part of the season, they seem to get a grip with it, and then recently we've seen them struggle in these games again. So Waterford are just like Athlone. They can throw in a stinker more than occasionally as well. So
yeah,
I'm going to go just for a mad old 2-2 here. Not really giving it much thought this game. It's it's kind of fatigue now at this stage. For it's their fourth meeting of the season. Just go on, get on with it, lads. And we'll get it over with.
Yeah. No, completely. I'm going to go 2-1 Waterford.
Okay, right. There is a couple of Premier Division games, and we'll speak about the FAI Cup games. Derry against Shamrock Rovers. And then after we get your prediction, Gary, and my prediction, we'll hear from Rory Higgins and from Shane McElhenney.
You build this one as the biggest game of the season in the Premier Division.
Well, if Derry don't win it, they're probably not going to win the title, are they?
No. No, and look, I think
we've had a few listener questions this week from Derry fans. Do Derry have to win this one to win the league is one question we're getting. And the other question is, if they win this, will they win this game in the league? They're the two questions that we've been getting.
Yeah, well, look, I think there's only one solution.
You went to see, I must have forgot, I thought I had it wrote down there somewhere. But
UCD Derry, actually, yeah, we didn't talk about that.
You went to it, didn't you, on Wednesday night?
I did go to it, yeah, it was a great crowd there. It was a who's who of League of Ireland people.
Including yourself,
I don't know. I wouldn't say I'm a who's who of anything. Who's who of egots, maybe. but I think there was 7 or 8 players, probably 6 or 7 or 8 managers as well. Mm-hmm. So really, you know, if you're League of Ireland anorak like yourself, you would have been very excited to go to that game.
And then, of course, Rory Higgins jetted out to Paris, which was great to see. I didn't bump into him, unfortunately. Would have loved to have shared a pint with Rory, but...
I'd say he was absolutely, totally relieved.
I'd say so.
Dear God, I'd say he had texting a few lads. Does anybody know where that fella Burke is? Say, yeah. I'll go to the opposite end of the city.
Yeah. Climb the Eiffel Tower.
Climb the Eiffel Tower and stay there. but yeah, no, I think there isn't much to say about that game. I think UCD are completely out of it. They were dirt. They're just at nothing throughout the game. You know, there's very little. You know, Rory learned absolutely nothing about his side on last Wednesday. And look, I think he was dead right to go to France, get a few points into him, chill out a bit. You know, game being on the Wednesday as well.
What will he learn here?
You learn if the season's over or not.
And will the season be over or not?
I think it's going to be a draw. I think it's going to be 0-0.
I could probably get on board with that, I think.
There you go. Well, which good enough. Good man.
Look, it's live on telly, so there you go, 0-0.
I think that's the end of it. Yeah, that's fair. Unfortunately, it is the kiss of death. In a lot of games, but
even to be honest, if Derry win this, I'd still fancy Rovers to win the league.
It'd be great if Derry won it.
It really would.
You know, for what it is. Unfortunately, I'm inclined to agree with you. I think Rovers is just going to have enough ignorance, let's say, to get through it. But I'm still going to go 0-0 and live to fight another day.
Yeah, I'll go 0-0 as well. I think Rory Higgins says somewhere in this audio that he's expecting a really good game, but we've just dumped all over that. But anyway, let's hear from the Derry City boss and from Shane McElhenney, who has been absolutely brilliant again this season for Derry, I have to say.
No, it certainly won't be easy. They're three in a row champions, and they're that for a reason. They know how to get it done. They know how to win. But we're in really good form the last few months, and it's a game we're relishing and looking forward to, and with a brilliant home support behind us, hopefully it can be a real special Brandwell night. It'll be a good match, that's for sure. If we're at our best and they're at their best, it'll be some game of football. I'll back my group of players every day of the week. He'll back his, and listen, it's a few months ago, we spoke as a group about putting ourselves in a position over a period of time. They set up something for ourselves, and we've managed to do that. All credit goes to our players for how they've went about their business the last few months. And we've given ourselves an opportunity. That's all it is at the minute. It's an opportunity. And we'll treat this game the way we treat every game, and we won't get too excited about it. We'll be nice and calm this week, and we'll prepare the way that we always prepare.
No, I think we all know. I think we all know as a group of players, and you know, I think like the manager said, we've been on a really good run of the blitz, you know, and we just take a game. We've taken every game as it's come, and we know Friday's a big game. We know it's that they're a really good side, and we just hope that we can go out and, you know, get the crowd behind us and you know, have a good rattle at them. So we're looking forward to it.
And I've said it to anyone that will listen, I think this is too big of a football club, and it was really important that we did change that mentality, and even in my first year here, when we came out of nowhere to finish in Europe, we went down to Tala and should have won the game, and the throw in where he takes it 20-25 yards further down the pitch, we were 1-0 up, we were really good in the game. And I actually think that result kind of changed the not the result, the performance, changed the mindset of our players, that we're capable of this, and then we've obviously added quality over the last couple of years to that as well. But there's a belief in this group that we can go toe-to-toe with anybody, and we just need to back it up. It talks cheap and all that sort of stuff, so we know that we're capable. We just need to deliver now.
Really give me the opportunity to come back in and become a part of a full-time setup again, and I think he's installed confidence. I think you've seen the brand of football that we've played over the last, you know, two seasons. He's installed confidence in all our players, and we play a good style of football. And no, look, I'm thankful to be here. I love being here, and you know, I come on every morning and train. And you know, it's probably, you know, it is probably the best group of lads that, you know, it's actually a really, really honest dressing room, and we all fight together and push good togetherness, and hopefully that'll show on the pitch on Friday night.
Obviously, think extremely highly of Stephen. He's been single-handedly the biggest influence in my career, both as a player, as a coach, as a manager. He's been an amazing mentor to me. So one thing I'm certainly not going to do is sit here and get taken down a road that I don't want to go down. What I would say is Irish football in the future will be in a better place from his tenure, given the fact that the amount of young players that have come into the squad, the amount of young players that he's exposed to huge international matches. And I know he's coming under a lot of criticism, but I think down the road we'll see the huge benefit of what's happened in the last couple of years. I know results haven't been great, but Irish football will be in a better place down the road. What I would say is, how do we, like, I understand that patience, people don't have patience in football, and I understand that, and I understand people want instant success, but what I would say is that both the North and the South have really, really talented young players. Really talented young players. You look at the North, just to name one, Shea Charles. You look at the South, Evan Ferguson. You've seen Jason Knight's performance last night. Like, both the North and South have really, really talented young players. And I'll just echo what I said previously, that I think, as I said, people want results now, but I do think that you'll see huge benefits of the young talent over the next few years.
Yeah, great to hear from Murray Higgins and Shane McElhenney. And Gary, you said UCD, you used your trademark here, your catchphrase, they were dirt on Wednesday against Kerry. They're taking Sligo, though, on, I think this is either Friday or Saturday night, I'm not sure, but they're playing them this weekend.
I think it's on Saturday.
We spoke about this game a couple of weeks ago on the pod, and we said we wouldn't be at all surprised if Sligo make a hames of this. How do you feel now, having watched UCD on Wednesday? Is there any chance that Sligo slip up here?
Oh, there's a very big chance, just the way Sligo are, but it'd be a monumental, it'd be catastrophic if they manage to lose this.
Like you said, if Derry don't win, that's probably the title race over, or particularly if Rovers win, we'll say, and a draw, maybe not so much conclusively, but if Rovers win, that's probably the title race over. If Sligo win here, they're going into the playoffs.
If Sligo don't win,
if Sligo lose this game, then
they're going
into the playoffs.
I think there's no two ways about it. They just have to go and do it. There's no, as I said a couple of weeks ago, shit or get off the pot. This is it. I don't want to just ram all of me comments or my trademarks, let's say, but if they fill the dogs against Cork, they can't do it again against a dire UCD team. It's just not acceptable. They can't do it. They've done it already this season, though.
Yeah, and they were lucky in the other one at the bowl where they got them penalties as well.
Yeah, bailed out. Like,
I think they would scrape through this.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 1-0 to Sligo.
I'm going to go 2-1 just to mix it up a bit. But
Jesus, it's been a long time since both of us predicted Sligo wins on this podcast.
Yeah, but it's just because I particularly see UCD last week. Like, they're just not at it. They're not near it.
Yeah.
And there's no two ways about it. I just think they have to go. The concern is for me, actually, right? They needed to win that game against Cork.
Yeah.
And they got pumped.
Yeah.
So what's different about this? They don't do it when there's no pressure. They don't do it when there is pressure. They don't do it at all. So I'm not really sure.
Look at UCD at home, without being disrespectful to UCD. I know that's extremely disrespectful. UCD at home, win or just pack it up, lads.
That's it. That's all there is to it.
FAI Cup quarterfinal weekend. Just before we preview these games, I can't remember if this has always been the case that we have league games and FAI Cup quarterfinals, but it's not really ideal, is it? Because that Derry Rovers game is massive. That's on TV, but at the same time, I would like to watch Galway Dundalk. I would have actually liked to have headed down the road to Drogheda against Bowes. I just feel a little bit of shine has maybe been taken off these Cup quarterfinals with the fact they're going up against the big Derry Rovers game on the weekend.
Yeah, it takes away from a bit of the excitement around us.
Media attention and everything, yeah.
Yeah, but look, I think, you know, it's a factor of, you know, you have to get the games played for the cup finals on a certain date. There's playoffs, there's loads of other stuff going on. Get it out, get it done. I think that's all there's to it. It's not ideal. It's definitely not ideal.
No. We'll start with these quarterfinals. Cork against Wexford.
Possibility for Wexford here to an upset?
I don't think so, but it's interesting, isn't it? Because when we were talking about the Cork Waterford game a few weeks ago, we were talking about how, you know, there was kind of different mindsets. Should Cork rest players? Should they target the game? And I think we both agreed they had to target the game against Waterford because they needed something to try and turn their season. They got that great result against Waterford, and then they got that brilliant result in the league against Sligo. So their season is going in the right direction now, but you're starting to wonder, Jesus, do they need to go deeper in the cup now? You know, now that they kind of have a foothold in the league, is a deep cup run what they need? But quarterfinal stages, I mean, they win this, they're in the semi-finals. God knows what type of draw they get in the semi. They could find themselves in the Aviva, and I don't think any club should ever turn down that possibility. So I think they'll go all guns blazing. I think with the former Rory Keaton here, Wexford, First Division, doing okay in the First Division, but as we've pointed out, it's a very weak First Division. There is a big gulf there. I think Cork will win this one. How comfortable will it be? Go 2-1, but it'll probably be more than that.
You don't think there's any chance of an upset?
No, so? I don't see it. No.
Okay. I'll go 1-0. I think it's going to be maybe a bit of a hard luck story for Wexford, but I think when all said and done, I think that the big success will be getting into the playoffs. But Longford Town are going to stop them doing that. Come on, the town.
Speaking of the town, Galway against Dundalk. This is going to be an interesting one.
The town? Oh, Dundalk town.
Yeah.
Oh. There's a huge potential for an upset.
There is.
Now, this is your team. Do you think Galway can do it?
I think they can do it.
Will they?
No.
Oh.
Just going on what
you'd
I
be
saw.
In Stephen O'Donnell's bad books if you say that now, would you?
Going on what I saw against Longford, again, it's a poor first division. That's not to take away from Galway's incredible record this season.
Yeah. But
there's a lot of players, not a lot, but there's two, three, four players in that Galway team that I saw against Longford that would not last in the Premier Division. I know Dundalk have been no great shakes this season, but Dundalk are going to have to be disciplined here. They're going to have to take a note out of the Longford Town playbook in terms of pumping balls away with your head, getting something on it, being physical. You know, they're going to have to defend an onslaught because it is going to be an onslaught. Home crowd behind them. I think it's a sellout, this one, or will be a sellout. Could be a real atmosphere behind Galway. So it's going to be fire and fury. They're going to throw everything they have at Dundalk. Dundalk just need to keep a structured shape. And I'd like to think with some of the attacking players they have that they might be able to pick Galway off on the break. But I'm not sure what the situation is regards. I don't think there are replays, is there? Because I haven't seen any dates set for potential replays. So it must be extra time.
Yeah, and I was going to ask that.
Yeah,
they haven't done the draw. Like, you know, there isn't brackets, is there? Or is there another draw done after the weekend?
Open draw after this.
Right. That's how they get to do. That's how they have managed to have the Dundalk quarterfinals all the time. very good.
But I think this could be a late night at the office, just like this podcast this evening. 20-1 here as we still rabble away. But I think this will be a late night at the office. Wouldn't be surprised if it goes to penalties. I think Dundalk scraped through this. One way or another.
I'm going to go 1-1 after extra time. Galway on penalties. I think it's going to be a famous night in Eamon DC Park.
Okay. Drogheda against Bowes. This is a sellout, which is great to see. Drogheda have done very well in Premier Division games against the likes of Bowes and Rovers and Derry in the last couple of seasons. How do you see this one going?
I was thinking about this.
Bowes haven't played since the derby, have they?
No.
No.
It's been a while since they've played. Yeah, I think Weaver's Park and the way Drogheda can dig out a big performance in a big game. We saw it a couple of times already this season.
This could be another one that goes the distance.
It could be, but like in my mind's eye, I can see Ryan Brennan scoring an old dirty, rotten, desperate, bumbling goal. Not that he's not capable of scoring bangers. He has scored plenty of bangers. But I just feel this is going to be a good night for Drogheda.
I'm going Drogs on pens.
I'm going to go Drogs. I think they might dig it out in extra time. I think it's going to be a poor enough game. Probably, you know, a bit testing each other out type thing. And 0-0, and then maybe someone makes a mistake or something like that at the back for Bowes. And it's 1-0 to
just on Bowes. It was good to see Afolabi get
the words.
I don't really know the point of calling a lad into a squad and then he's not in the match day squad. Maybe someone can explain that there's some sort of reason for that. But just from a recognition point of view, I suppose it's a feather in his cap. It should give him a bit of confidence.
That was it, and I was going to highlight that. What's the point of it though?
Yeah,
it's like bringing Talbot into the squad. It's a pointless. A totally pointless endeavour. I don't understand it. It's a tokenism at this stage.
It has
a League of Ireland lad locking around. They're not playing at the weekend. Like we'll say, I don't know, like Brian Maher when he was playing with Bray. Not as polished and much younger, but like, would they have been taking him out of a first division squad that was playing at the weekend? No. Like, I don't rate Talbot, and I've been fairly consistent in that for a good while. He shouldn't be in the squad, like, even at, you know, the training camps or anything like that.
At least my defence of Afolabi earlier in the season is really paying off now. You've got egg on your face.
Do I? It's from the so he brought into the Ireland squad by the manager you want out, and it says is in an untenable position. It works. That's what you're hanging
your hat on. If you do the mental gymnastics enough, it works.
Okay,
I'm right. You're wrong. Right, ooh. So we're both going for Drogs to advance there, are we?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, and Harps against Pats. This won't take long. Pats will hammer them 4-0.
Pats will hammer them, and there'll be a bag of kebabs taken out of. Was that All-Star
Support Grill? Yeah. Getting the boys.
Yeah, they'll fill the boots and yeah, great feed up there. But I think it's going to be, it'll be academic. I'm going to go, I don't know what, I'm going to go 5-0. And I'm just, that's just based on the last bit of defending I've seen from Harps against Waterford. They were just diabolical. Architects of their own downfall, as the saying goes, but by God, did they build a beautiful building out of it. They were just in a crazy, crazy defending and fully deserving of that loss. And unfortunately, another one's on the cards. 5-0 Pats.
Yeah, that's look, that's the Between the Stripes Predictions League for this week, and that's pretty much the end of the show. It's obviously been, I suppose, a challenging show for myself and Gary for obvious reasons, but as we said, in the early part of the show, we don't shy away from issues here. No matter what club it is, we will always pick it up. So you know, you'll get that with us here Between the Stripes. And I forgot to mention earlier on, I bumped into so many listeners over in Paris. It was great. Bumped into, I can't remember his name now, but he was an Athlone fan, and he was he recognised me. He was ribbing me in one of the bars about Longford Town, and I got chatting to him, and he said, I'm an Athlone fan. He doesn't go to the games anymore. I think he was involved in that boycott back in the day, but he still watches the games on LOI TV, and he was very complimentary of the streams that you're producing, Gary, and all the rest. But he said he still hates Longford Town. Got chatting to him. He was a good lad. Bumped into plenty of others as well over the course of the weekend. So that's always great to see. But I think that's where we will leave it for this week's pod.
Sounds good. Sounds like a plan.
Yep, 1:15 in the morning, so that's definitely where we will leave it. But look, hopefully you will enjoy this week's show, and hopefully you'll be back with us again next week. As ever, we were brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. But until next time, thanks for listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.